The Greek philosopher Socrates laid down the foundation of Western thought in about 425 BC when he began teaching that we live in an orderly universe and that there is a cause-effect relationship between everything. Whatever happens, happens for a reason. Even if you don't know the reason, that doesn't mean that a reason doesn't exist. All of success comes from finding out the cause-effect relationships between the things you do and the things you want, and then organizing your activities so that they are in harmony with your highest and best interests. Socrates was the teacher of Plato, and Plato was the teacher of Aristotle. Aristotle is considered perhaps the most important philosopher in human history. It has been said that for 2,000 years, all philosophy was merely footnotes to Aristotle. Aristotle's great breakthrough in the Nicomachean Ethics was his conclusion that all human behavior is purposeful. It is aimed at a goal. Everything you do, he said, you do for a reason. And behind every smaller goal, there is a larger goal that you are striving toward. Aristotle determined that the ultimate goal for everyone is the desire to be happy. No matter what you do, your ultimate goal beyond what you are trying to accomplish at the moment is to achieve your own happiness. You are successful in life to the degree to which you can organize your world in such a way that you are genuinely happy. You are a failure in life to the degree to which you cannot attain your own happiness. For example, say you want to get a good job. Why? Well, so that you can earn a good living. Why? So that you can have enough money. Why? So that you can buy a house and a car and have a nice standard of living. Why? So that you can have happy relationships and a good life with other people. Why? And the final answer is always, so that you can be happy. The only difference among people in this area is that some people are better at achieving their own happiness and others are not particularly good at it. Some people make choices and decisions that make them unhappy and worse off than they ever would have been if they had done nothing at all. But always, happiness is the goal aimed at. Aristotle did not stop there. He went on to examine the human condition and came to a remarkable conclusion. He said that only the good can be happy, and only the virtuous can be good. This is one of the major breakthroughs in philosophy. Imagine, you can only be happy if you're a good person, and you can only be a good person if you practice the virtues that are associated with goodness. What this means simply is that if you want to have a wonderful life, you must continually strive to become a better and better person. Any deviation from this course will lead you to lower levels of happiness and greater dissatisfaction. Every single time you act consistently with the highest virtues that you know, you feel happy and strong inside. Your self-confidence and self-esteem go up, and you become more effective in your relationships and in your work. Virtue is its own reward. It pays for itself in the inner feeling of pleasure and contentment that you have when you live consistent with the very best you know. Character is the greatest of all luck factors. From the very beginning of this program, I've emphasized the fact that you inevitably attract into your life the people, circumstances, ideas, opportunities, and resources that are in harmony with your dominant thoughts. You can never have on the outside what you do not deserve by right of the consciousness that you have built on the inside. Your outer world, by the law of correspondence, is always a reflection of your inner world. If you want to change your outer world, you must go to work, like a computer programmer at a keyboard, to reprogram your subconscious mind, your world of values, beliefs, and inner convictions, so that the person you are inside is exactly the mental equivalent of the life you want to enjoy on the outside. You're probably listening to this program because you want to be more successful in life. You want to be happier. You want to have better relationships, make more money, and more fully express yourself in everything you do. You want to have a great life. And what makes you superior to the average person is that you are willing to constantly learn more and more about how you can become better and better. But what is success? The Gallup organization interviewed 1,500 members of Marquis's Who's Who in America some years ago. These are among the most prestigious of all living Americans, company presidents, leading politicians, Nobel Prize winners, and others who have made a significant contribution to American life and who have been recognized and rewarded by their peers and others. They ask these highly successful men and women what they consider to be the chief rewards of success. The first four rewards of success that virtually all of them gave might surprise you. Number one was they felt they had earned the respect of their parents. Number two was they felt they had earned the respect of their spouses and their children. Number three was they felt they had earned the respect of their peers and colleagues in their field. And number four was they felt that what they were doing was making a difference in the lives of other people. The fifth ingredient of success was that they no longer worried about money, even though many of them were not particularly wealthy. They had simply reached a point where it didn't matter that much in contrast to the work they were doing. When you think of success in your own life, you will find that it is closely tied up with the respect that you feel that you get from the people that you respect. Almost everything you do is done or not done with a view toward how other people will think of you and react. We said before that your reputation is your greatest asset. Your reputation can be defined as how people think about you and talk about you when you're not there. As you know from your own experience, when people talk about you in either positive or negative terms, and you find out about it later, it has a major impact on your thinking and your emotions, either positive or negative. One of the marks of the superior person is that he is always thinking about how a particular decision or behavior will be judged or evaluated by other people on the outside. He's concerned not only about doing the right thing, but about doing what appears to be the right thing from the perspective of others. Because of the law of attraction, as you develop your character and live more and more by the highest and best virtues that you know, you will become a happier and happier person, and you'll attract into your life and be surrounded by other men and women of quality and character as well. Aristotle had another observation. He pointed out that the entire purpose of education is to inculcate the key virtues in young people so that they would be guaranteed of a happy, successful life when they grew up. He knew, as you do, that everything in life is relationships. No one lives on an island completely to himself. Everything we do in our world involves relationships with others in some way, and there is no more fundamental statement about who you really are than the description of your character. But what if a person's education has been deficient? What if you have grown up without being thoroughly trained in the essential virtues that you must have to be an outstanding person as an adult? Aristotle pointed out that a virtue is a practice, not a simple feeling or belief. Again, we say that it is not what you hope or wish or intend, but it is only what you do that really counts in the eyes of other people. Aristotle said that if you do not have a virtue that you desire to have, you can develop it in yourself by practicing the virtue in every circumstance where it is called for. You can act as if you already have the virtue that you desire. The law of reversibility says that you can actually act your way into feeling and believing something that you sincerely desire to feel or believe. You can take complete charge of the development of your character and become a truly superior person by deciding that you will walk, talk, act, and think consistently with the very highest and best that you know under all circumstances. The law of concentration says that whatever you dwell upon grows. You can use this powerful law to shape your character by dwelling upon a virtue that you want to be known for and respected for. For example, the core virtue in life and relationships is the virtue of integrity. The dictionary definition of integrity includes oneness, wholeness, perfection, fully integrated, without blemish or fault. As you meditate or dwell on the quality of integrity and what it means to be a person of integrity, you can think of other people, those around you, or even historical characters who are known and respected for their integrity. Do you remember the nickname of Abraham Lincoln? It was Honest Abe. From the time he was a young man working in a store and walking miles to return a couple of pennies that he had overcharged a woman, he was developing a reputation of impeccable honesty. His reputation was so strong that he was nominated to be the presidential candidate of the new Republican Party at the convention in Chicago, even though he never left Springfield, Illinois. The strength of his character carried the convention and made him one of America's most revered and respected presidents. The more you dwell on a virtue such as integrity, the more the implications of that virtue soak into your subconscious mind. And the more they soak into your subconscious mind, the more likely it is that you will act as a person of integrity when the situation demands it. As you develop a greater and greater reputation for integrity, more and more people will like and trust you and want to be associated with you. Doors will open for you. You'll start to experience luck that people with weaker characters never seem to enjoy. Francis Fukuyama wrote a book recently called Trust. This book studies various nations over the centuries and concludes that high-trust nations are highly prosperous. Low-trust nations have low levels of prosperity and development. The greater the level of trust amongst the people and the business community in any particular nation, the greater the amount of economic activity, growth, development, and prosperity. The lower the level of trust, the higher the level of corruption and dishonesty will be, and the more cautious anyone will be about investing or risking with anyone else. It's the same with relationships. The fundamental glue that holds a relationship together is trust. It's impossible for us to proceed in any kind of a relationship unless we trust and feel confident with the other person. All good friendships are based on trust. All strong families are based on trust. And in companies which are larger business families, trust is the fundamental ingredient that determines the success and prosperity of the enterprise. The very best companies to work for have high-trust environments. Everyone in the company, at every level, absolutely trusts and believes that what people say is true. In almost every company of value, telling a lie can be a sufficient reason for losing your job. Americans in general place an inordinate emphasis and importance on the factor of trust. Trust is a fundamental ingredient that holds our whole society together from top to bottom and from side to side. The ultimate expression of trust is truthfulness. Your very best friends and closest associates in life will always be those who tell you the truth. The willingness to be absolutely truthful with yourself and others is the critical mark of character. If integrity is the core quality of character, then truthfulness is the most obvious expression of integrity. Shakespeare wrote, "And this above all, to thine own self be true. Then it must follow, as the night the day, thou canst not then be false to any man." You must always be absolutely true to yourself. This means being true to the very best that is in you. This also means that you always do your very best in every situation, especially at work where people are counting on you. If the inner expression of integrity is truth, then the outer expression of integrity is quality work and quality behavior under all circumstances. In Abraham Maslow's studies of self-actualizing people, he found that one of the characteristics of the most fully integrated people he interviewed was that they were extremely objective and truthful about themselves, about their strengths and weaknesses, and about their situations in life. They never tried to convince themselves of things that weren't true. They lived in truth with themselves, and as a result, they were able to live in truth with others. Refuse to play games with yourself. Refuse to pretend or wish or hope that something is not true when in your heart you know it is. Refuse to compromise your integrity for any reason. As Ralph Waldo Emerson once wrote, "Nothing at last is sacred but the integrity of your own mind." This means that you live in truth with everyone around you. You state your truth simply and honestly. You do not stay in relationships that are wrong for you or do things that you do not agree with or believe in. You don't say things to people that are not honest and sincere expressions of your true beliefs. You adamantly insist on living in truth in every aspect of your life. The roots of self-esteem and self-confidence are deep within your character. The more you practice impeccable integrity in your relationships with yourself and others, the greater self-confidence you have and the more you like and respect yourself. And the more you like and respect yourself, as you know, the more you like and respect others, and the more they like and respect you. And it all begins with your own inner attitudes of mind, with your own deepest values and beliefs and convictions. Your success on the outside is determined by how adamant you are on the inside about remaining true to the very best you know. Integrity is the one value that guarantees all the others. You are honest to the degree to which you live consistent with everything else that you know to be right and good and true. And the foundation of integrity is self-discipline. Albert Hubbard, one of the great writers of the early part of the 20th century, once wrote that self-discipline is the ability to make yourself do what you should do, when you should do it, whether you feel like it or not. Self-discipline is the iron quality of character. It is your level of self-discipline that will largely determine your success or failure in everything you do. Another way of saying self-discipline is self-control, self-mastery. You know that you only feel good about yourself to the degree to which you feel you are in control of your own life. When you make clear, unequivocal decisions to do a particular thing, and then you discipline yourself to do it, even when you don't feel like it, you feel terrific about yourself. There's a direct correlation between self-discipline and self-esteem. The more you discipline yourself to do the things that are the very best for you, the more you like and respect yourself. And the more you like and respect yourself, the more capable you are of disciplining yourself to do the things that you know you should do. Again, it was Aristotle who said that you can develop any quality in solitude except character. You can only develop character through active involvement with other people and situations. You are where you are and what you are today because of the choices and decisions that you have made in the past. You have either thought carefully and made your decisions based on good information and good judgment, consistent with the highest values you know, or you have not. But whatever choices and decisions you made in the past, that was then, and this is now. Every day, every week, every month, you evolve and grow through life. You made decisions when you were a child that you would never think of making as an adult. You made decisions last year that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't make this year. When you made those choices and decisions, you were that particular kind of a person. But today, you're a different person. Don't be hung up on the mistakes you've made in the past. The person who made those mistakes was an earlier version of yourself. Today, you're a different person. Today, you can make new choices and new decisions based on your ever-growing storehouse of knowledge and experience. Today, you can put your hands on the wheel of your own future and turn it in whatever direction you want to go. Why is it that everyone does not live lives of high character? Why is it that every individual does not practice the essential virtues of integrity and truthfulness in all their dealings, especially since it is so closely correlated with success and happiness in every aspect of life? The answer is contained in what I call the expediency factor in human thinking and behavior. This E factor is the primary reason for failure in life. It's only when you understand this E factor, which is a fundamental defect in the human computer, that you can counteract it to assure that you live a great life and that you accomplish great things. The E factor is based on the fundamental flaws or weaknesses in human character. There are many elements of what is referred to as human nature, but I'll just describe the basic seven. Any one of these, improperly controlled and directed, is enough to cause a person to fail. A great tragedy is that most people have all seven of them functioning at the same time, and they therefore achieve at very low levels. The first quality of human nature is that you always attempt to conserve energy in accomplishing any task. The reason for this is that your time and your energy represents your life, and you place a value on your life. You are engineered psychologically so that you cannot consciously choose a harder way to do something if you can see an easier way to do it. This means that for better or for worse, you and everyone else is lazy. Now, there's nothing wrong with laziness if it's directed constructively toward finding easier ways to accomplish the same task. The entire history of human and technological advancement has been men and women applying their creativity to achieve the same goals for themselves and others, but with a lower expenditure of effort and energy. It is only when people instinctively seek easy ways to do things that end up being counterproductive and even hurtful to themselves and others that laziness becomes a bad quality. The second quality of human nature is that everyone prefers more to less. If I were to offer you $5 or $10 for the same apple, you would choose $10. This is normal and natural and healthy. All human beings prefer more to less, all things being equal. What this means is that everyone is greedy. Again, if greediness, which is neither positive nor negative, is directed toward improving one's life and increasing the well-being of yourself and others, it can be a positive influence for good. If greediness is aimed at getting something for nothing, or something that a person doesn't deserve, then it can be harmful and destructive. But it is the way that laziness or greediness is applied that determines whether it is a good or bad quality of the individual. The third quality of human nature is that everyone thinks for themselves. Only you can feel your own happiness, your own pleasure, your own dissatisfaction, your own hunger, thirst, contentment, or discontentment. No one can feel these feelings for you or decide for you what is best in these areas. And you always decide based on what you feel is best for you. This simply means that you are selfish or self-centered, self-directed, self-determined. When you go to a buffet, for instance, only you can determine the ideal mixture of foods for your appetite and for your palate, based on that selection at that moment. You are always selfish. And again, there's nothing wrong with being selfish. It's just a fact of nature, like being lazy or greedy. A minister working in a rescue mission in the inner city can be totally selfish in that he or she is determined to satisfy his deepest needs and beliefs by helping as many people as he can with the resources that he has available. This minister can be lazy, greedy, and selfish in a very healthy, positive, and constructive way that benefits more and more other people. The fourth quality we all have in common is that every act that we engage in is to somehow improve our situation over what it would have been if we hadn't acted in the first place. Everyone seeks improvement of some kind in everything they say or do, consciously or unconsciously. What this means is that everyone is ambitious. Everyone wants to improve their life, work, relationships, health, or financial status in some way. The opposite of being ambitious would be to be completely indifferent or complacent, to be completely satisfied and not care at all whether your life got better or worse. Ambition is a very healthy quality and is the great stimulus that drives people to overcome obstacles and achieve goals that no one might have believed possible. Of course, if a person's ambition causes him to engage in dishonest or hurtful behaviors, then ambition becomes a negative quality. But in and of itself, it is neither positive or negative. As with all qualities of human nature, it is only the way that ambition is expressed in action that places a positive or negative value upon it. The fifth characteristic of human nature is that nobody can ever know everything there is to know about anything. This means that no matter how much you learn or study, every decision you make or action you take is a speculation of some kind. Because you cannot be knowledgeable of all the facts, there can never be a guarantee that your action will bring about the results that you desire. This means that everyone is ignorant to a certain degree. Some people have far higher levels of ignorance than others, but everyone is ignorant in that no one can ever know everything there is to know about even his particular area of specialization. The drive to know, to find out, to minimize risk by increasing the amount of knowledge available on a particular subject is the primary reason why the totality of human knowledge is doubling every 2 to 3 years today. More people in more fields are generating more information and knowledge today than has ever been done in all of human history, and the rate is accelerating. And this is because we intuitively recognize that we are all ignorant to some degree. The sixth quality of human nature that goes along with being a human being is that people take pride in themselves, their appearance, their accomplishments, their family, their work, and their possessions. People like to look good and be thought well of by others. This means that everyone is vain to a certain degree. The opposite of vanity would be that a person did not care at all about how he or she appeared to others in any way. Vanity is a good thing. It leads us to strive for beauty, health, wealth, success, and material attainment. Vanity is the driving force behind the clothing industry, the furniture industry, the home industry, the automotive industry, the cosmetic industry, and the entertainment industry, the sports industry, and even the desire to start and build successful enterprises. It is the driving force behind political activity and exerts an inordinate influence on all your choices and decisions. The seventh quality of human nature is impatience. Everyone prefers sooner to later. Everyone wants things done now rather than at some later date. If I offered you $100 and I could give it to you now or 1 year from now, you would choose to have it immediately. This is normal and natural. This is just human nature. Why is this? Simple. You value your life, and your life is made up of time. If you can have a reward or benefit sooner, especially because the future is a speculation, you will always prefer to have it now rather than later. Our entire society today is driven by the desire of consumers to have the things they want faster, easier, newer, and better than ever before. Every single company in the world is driven by the need for speed. They are driven by the need to service customers faster and better than their competitors or risk being put out of business. The first computer handled 300,000 instructions per second. And according to Moore's law, improvements in computer design increase information processing speed to the point where it doubles every 18 months, and the cost of processing information drops in half. Now that was back in the 70s. Today, a Pentium chip processes 100 million instructions per second, and there are advanced Pentium chips for personal computers on the drawing boards that will process 1 billion instructions per second within a few years. In fact, because of this desire for speed and the impatience that people have, especially with technology, the game Sony PlayStation, which sells for less than $300 to children, already processes 1 billion instructions per second. And if anything, the speed of technology is picking up because of this incredible impatience on the part of human beings. So what do we have? Well, the basic person, including yourself, is lazy, greedy, selfish, ambitious, ignorant, vain, and impatient. The average person, therefore, is expedient. The normal individual constantly seeks the fastest and easiest way to get the things that he or she wants immediately, with little or no concern for secondary consequences or what might happen as a result. The only brake on the runaway impulses of the E factor is self-discipline, self-restraint, and self-mastery. It is only a return to the virtues and values and an adamant insistence on only doing the right thing and thinking it through in advance that enables you to escape from the allure and the pull of the E factor. The opposite of the E factor is the practice of the great virtues that are associated with character and with superior people. Let's look at some of these virtues for a moment. You know that integrity is the key virtue, the one that guarantees all the others. Your level of integrity determines how firmly you live by what you know to be right and true. Another extremely important virtue for your success and happiness is that of responsibility. When you accept responsibility, you accept that you are the primary creative force in your own life. You are where you are and what you are because of your own thoughts and your own behaviors. You say continually, "I am responsible." You say, "If it's to be, it's up to me." When you adopt the virtue of responsibility, you stop blaming other people and making excuses. You never complain, never explain. You take complete charge of your life, and you accept responsibility not only for yourself, but for all those who look up to you and depend upon you to fulfill your commitments. Compassion is one of the greatest of all virtues. It's the dwelling upon and practicing of compassion that enables you to be more patient, more tolerant, more understanding, and more sympathetic toward others who are unhappy or less fortunate. Instead of trying constantly to get the things you want faster and easier, you put yourself into the situation of others who are struggling in life. You keep reminding yourself that there, but for the grace of God, go I. The highest and most developed of men and women have been men and women of great compassion, great emotion, and great feeling for those who are struggling. And the more compassionate you are toward the less fortunate, the better a person you become within yourself. You recognize that you have been extremely fortunate in life to have come so far, and you withhold judgment on those who perhaps still have a long way to come. Kindness is another and perhaps one of the greatest of all virtues. It's been said that in life, you can never be too kind or too fair. Everyone you meet is carrying a heavy load. When you go through your day expressing kindness and courtesy to everyone you meet, you help to alleviate the burdens that most people are struggling with. You leave a feeling of warmth and good cheer behind you. And the best payoff of all for becoming a kindly person is that you feel better about yourself. When you express compassion and kindness and take responsibility without making excuses or blaming other people, you feel much better about yourself as a human being. You actually become a better person. You reprogram your subconscious mind and change your character in a very healthy way. Friendship is another wonderful virtue. And you know that to have a friend, you must be a friend. You can make more friends in a few weeks by striving to be a good friend to others than you could in years trying to get people to like you. Dale Carnegie once wrote that the very best way to build friendly relationships with others is to become genuinely interested in them. You can overcome any shyness or insecurity you may have by forgetting about yourself and simply asking questions of the other person. What sort of work do you do? How did you get into that field anyway? How is everything going for you? And once you've asked these open and honest questions about another person and his or her life, listen quietly and attentively to the answers. Listen without interrupting. Nod, smile, and pay attention. The more you get out of yourself and focus your emotions and attention on others, the better you will feel about yourself and the better others will feel about you. These positive feelings become self-reinforcing. Because of the pleasure principle, the fact that you move toward pleasure and away from pain, the more you engage in behaviors that are intrinsically rewarding, the more you program them into your personality and make them a permanent part of your character. Gentleness is another virtue that you can cultivate, especially with the important people in your life. It's interesting that only the strong can be gentle. People who are rough and indifferent toward the feelings of others are usually weak and insincere people with low levels of self-esteem and high feelings of insecurity. And wonderfully enough, when you are gentle, patient, tolerant, kind, and compassionate to others, no matter what the circumstances, you become a better and better person inside. You become more admired and respected, especially when you practice these qualities with your spouse and children, with your friends, and with your employees. Great men and women are often some of the kindest and gentlest people that you'll ever meet. The greatest of all goals in human life is peace of mind. It is the true measure of how well you are really doing as a human being. When you set peace of mind as your goal and you organize your life around it, you will probably never make another mistake. Peace of mind only comes when you are living consistently with the highest values and virtues that you know. Peace of mind comes when you know that you are being impeccably honest with yourself and others. Peace of mind comes when you listen to the still, small voice within you. You trust your intuition. You go with the flow of your own nature. You do what you know to be right and good and true. And when you do, you attract into your life people and opportunities that enable you to make more progress in a couple of years than many people make in a lifetime. And everyone will call you lucky. Perhaps the most important of all luck factors is the quality of courage. Self-confidence, courage, boldness, and the willingness to move forward toward your goals with no guarantees of success is a key luck factor. With it, you can do virtually anything in life, and without it, none of the other qualities will help you very much. Fear always has been and always will be your deadliest enemy. Fear and doubt have done more to shortchange and sabotage the possibilities of individuals than any other force in human personality. It's not what is going on around you, but what is going on within you that is determining everything you are and everything you accomplish. And developing high levels of courage and resolution are the keys to your putting your entire life into high gear. The law of willingness, a key luck factor, says that to succeed, you must be willing to do whatever it takes to achieve your goal. Of course, this means within the law and within reason. You never do anything that is illegal or immoral to achieve your goals, nor do you jump out of airplanes without a parachute. But within these boundaries, the quality of willingness is one of the most important of all luck factors. Many people, when they set a goal for themselves, are willing to do almost everything that it takes to achieve the goal. But this is not enough. You must be so committed to your goal that you are willing to pay any price, go any distance, and make any sacrifice if that's what it takes to get from where you are to where you want to be. Do you want to be financially independent? Do you want to be rich? Do you want to be a millionaire over the course of your working lifetime? Well, there are no obstacles stopping you from achieving your financial goals. Hundreds of thousands and millions of men and women over the years have achieved all of those goals starting from nothing and many times starting from deeply in debt. And so can you. The only question is, how badly do you want it? Once you've decided exactly what you want, you can activate the law of courage to increase your luck. This law says that if you move boldly in the direction of your goals, unseen forces will come to your aid. Many people hesitate or quit altogether because they can't see how they're going to get from where they are to where they want to go. They don't realize that a journey of 1,000 leagues begins with a single step. It is only when you step out in faith, when you act boldly in the direction of your dreams, that things really begin to happen for you. When Aristotle wrote about courage, he defined it as the quality of the golden mean between recklessness on the one extreme and cowardliness on the other. Courage sits right in the middle. And he observed that the way to develop courage is by practicing courage in every situation where courage is required. There's only one good thing about the fears that hold you back. They are all learned. You are not born with any fears. When you come into the world, you and every other child has two wonderful qualities. First, you are unafraid. The infant has no natural fears except for the fears of falling and loud noises, which are physical. And second, you are completely spontaneous. The infant expresses himself completely without any thought or concern about what anyone else says or thinks. As you grow up, however, your parents and the people around you begin instructing you in the fears that then hold you back for the rest of your life. First, when you begin exploring the world around you, they start telling you things like, stop, get away from there, don't touch that, put that down, get out of there, and perhaps the most powerful negative word of all, no. As a child, whenever you try to touch, taste, smell, feel, or get into something, there's always someone there stopping you and telling you to stop doing it. It's too dangerous. You're too small. Get away from there. As a result, at an unconscious level, you soon develop the belief that you are too small, too weak, too inadequate, and too ineffective. You start to believe that I'm not good enough. Soon you begin to develop the first traces of the fear of failure. The fear of failure is always expressed in the words, I can't. I can't. I can't. When you become an adult, you take over the negative reinforcement process begun by your parents, and you start saying whenever something new or challenging comes up, I can't do that. I'm not smart enough. I'm not creative enough. I'm not educated enough. I'm not outgoing enough. Whatever it is, your very first reaction to a new opportunity or possibility is to come up with a reason why it's not possible for you. Throughout this program, I have asked, do you want to be financially independent? If you're not careful, you will go to work and act as a lawyer arguing against yourself. you will become the prosecutor against yourself in your own case. You will immediately think up all the reasons why it's not possible for you. And as Henry Ford once said, if you believe you can do a thing or you believe you can't, in either case, you're probably right. The second fear that you develop as a result of childhood conditioning is the fear of rejection. This comes about when your parents make their love for you conditional upon your behavior. If your parents continually criticize and disapprove of you because you do or don't do certain things, you learn very early to adjust your behavior so that you're always trying to do what you think your parents want and approve of. When you grow up, if you're not careful, you can become hypersensitive to the opinions and approval of other people. Some people are so traumatized by early childhood experiences that they cannot make a decision in adult life that they think anyone around them, or even people they don't even know, might disapprove of. The greatest single obstacle to people starting their own businesses or a second income business is the fear of disapproval and ridicule from others. Rather than having someone else not like them or not admire them, they'd rather do nothing at all. And when you do nothing at all, you accomplish nothing at all as well. As Wayne Gretzky, the hockey player, once said, you miss every shot you don't take. The fear of rejection is characterized by the feeling that I have to, I have to, I have to. It's the compulsive feeling that you have to do things that others will approve of and that simultaneously you cannot do anything that others may disapprove of. Now let me point out that mild fears of failure and rejection are healthy. Mild fears of failure can drive you to succeed. Mild feelings of inadequacy and inferiority can drive you to do the things and become the person that others will admire and respect. In this case, they act as a positive stimulus to constructive behavior. Fears of rejection, when they're expressed in a valid consideration for the feelings and opinions of others, can be very healthy. The desire to be liked and accepted by others lies at the basis of our respect for the rule of law, common courtesy, manners, politeness, and the social customs and norms that make civilized life possible. The Greeks had a famous saying, moderation in all things. There's nothing wrong with moderation in fears as long as they don't have the effect of slamming on the brakes of your own potential, which unfortunately is the case for most people. The way you get over the fear of failure is, whenever you think of something that is making you tense or uneasy, you cancel it out by using the law of substitution and by repeating the words, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. To overcome the fear of rejection, you repeat to yourself, I don't have to, I don't have to, I don't have to. When you tell yourself that you don't have to do anything that you don't want to do, and that you can do anything that you really do want to do, you begin to take full control of your mind and emotions, both consciously and subconsciously. And the more you act boldly and move in the direction of your dreams, the more the law of attraction goes to work for you. The more confident and optimistic you become, the more your superconscious mind goes to work to adjust all of your thoughts and behaviors and the world around you so that you experience incidences of serendipity and synchronicity over and over again. When I talked about goals earlier in this program, I talked about the importance of dreaming big dreams. I talked about how important it was that you wrote out a dream list, a list of everything you could possibly want to be or have or do in the future if you had all the time, all the money, all the education, all the experience and resources that you could possibly need. Here's the greatest question of all for blasting through the fear barriers that hold you back. What one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? If you knew you had no limitations at all, if you were absolutely guaranteed of success in any one great thing, what one big goal would you set for yourself? Almost everyone knows the answer to this question as soon as they hear it. But the instant you define the answer, your fears will surge in on you from all sides like a mob of subconscious demons, arousing your doubts and anxieties and undermining your confidence and belief that these things are possible for you. Here's a good way to test the mental obstacles or excuses that you've used in the past to hold yourself back. Ask yourself, is there anyone else in our society who has experienced the same limitations that I have, but who has gone on to be successful anyway? This question forces you to be very honest with yourself. It forces you to stop playing games with your own head. Whatever your favorite excuse is, you can be absolutely sure that there are thousands and perhaps tens of thousands of people who have had it far worse than you could ever dream of having it, who've gone on to accomplish wonderful things and make a significant contribution to their lives, their families, and their communities. So, what's holding you back? Psychologists today have identified two major factors that cause you to be afraid far more than is justified by the facts in any situation. The first, which is deeply rooted in the fear of failure, is the feeling of learned helplessness. Dr. Martin Seligman of the University of Pennsylvania, in his book Learned Optimism, explains on the basis of 25 years of research that perhaps 80% or more of our population has this feeling of learned helplessness to one degree or another. Learned helplessness is this feeling that you are helpless, that there's nothing that you can do. It's manifested in continually using the words, I can't, I can't. Psychologist Abraham Maslow said that the history of the human race is the story of men and women selling themselves short. The reason you settle for far less than is possible for you is because you have become unconsciously convinced that there's very little that you can do to change things. However, this is not really true. You can bring about dramatic changes, and sometimes very quickly, by practicing the lessons of luck we've talked about throughout this program. In reality, the only limitations on your abilities are your imagination and your desire. You remember Napoleon Hill's famous words, "Whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve." If there's any goal that you can clearly define for yourself and make a plan for its accomplishment, you almost certainly have the inborn capabilities and talents to achieve. Your very ability to articulate and define something that you really, really want means that you have the ability to attain it, as long as you want it long enough and hard enough. The second fear that holds people back from great success and causes them to fear, especially rejection, is the comfort zone. We're all creatures of habit. We get into habits and then we tend to stick by them, even if we're not particularly happy with the results we're experiencing as a result. The law of habit is a key luck factor. It says that in the absence of a clear decision on your part or some external stimulus, you will keep on acting in the same way indefinitely. The law of habit is the same as the law of inertia, first articulated by Sir Isaac Newton. He said that a body in motion tends to remain in motion unless acted upon by an external force. This law, applied to you, says that you will continue to do the same things, associate with the same people, earn pretty much the same amount of money, and enjoy pretty much the same level of accomplishment, unless you make a clear decision to change your situation, or unless something happens to you that forces you to change, that forces you out of your comfort zone. This is why losing a job, the breakdown of a marriage or relationship, or the loss of all your money in a bad investment can actually be a good thing. It can jar you out of your complacency and kick you out of your comfort zone. It can wake you up and alert you to other possibilities and other directions that you can go in. No matter what happens to you, force yourself to be future-oriented. Instead of dwelling on your problems in the past, throw your mind forward and ask, what do I do from here? What's the next step? And especially, what can I learn from this situation that will help me to be stronger and better in the future? The law of assumption applies to the quality of courage and is a key to luck and success. It was best summed up by the writer Dorothea Brand, who concluded that it was the greatest of all secrets of success. She said, "Whatever you sincerely desire, act as if it were impossible to fail, and it shall be." Remember, you can only tell what you truly believe and value by looking at the way you act, the decisions and choices you make, and the behaviors you engage in. Anyone can tell what your real goals and values are by simply looking at what you do every single day. If a person says that he wants to be happy, healthy, financially independent, and enjoy wonderful relationships, but he eats too much exercises too little, seldom reads or listens to audio programs, and spends his evening either socializing with friends or watching television, then he is telling the whole world what he really wants. What he really wants is to have an easy, undisciplined life characterized by wasted time and empty hours of brainless entertainment. And whatever a person sows, that is also what he or she will reap. Here's an interesting point that changed my life when I finally understood it some years ago. It is that everyone is afraid. You are afraid, and I am afraid, and everyone you meet is afraid of certain things. As a result of our childhood conditioning, we all grow up with an entire list of fears. These fears sometimes help us, and mostly hurt us or hold us back, but we all have them. So, if everyone is afraid, what is the difference between the brave person and the coward? And the answer is simple. The brave person is the person who acts in spite of his fears. The coward is the person who allows his fears to overwhelm him and control his thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. Ralph Waldo Emerson once wrote that the most important lesson he ever learned in his life was this: do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain. One of the hallmarks of the superior person is that he or she makes a habit of confronting his or her fears on a regular basis. I've made this wonderful discovery. When you can identify a fear and you move toward that fear, the fear diminishes and loses its hold over you. But if you back away from the fear grows and grows until it dominates your whole life. As the actor Glenn Ford once said, if you do not do the thing you fear, the fear controls your life. Mark Twain wrote, courage is not lack of fear, absence of fear, it is control of fear, mastery of fear. The law of habit says that whatever you do over and over again becomes a new habit. If you make a habit of confronting your fears, of doing the thing you fear, of acting as if you had no fears at all in any difficult situation, your fears become smaller and smaller, and your level of courage grows higher and higher. Soon you'll reach the point where you are virtually unafraid of anything. What great goals would you set for yourself if you had no fears at all? Here's a great exercise. Take your dream list and use the worry buster method on each of your dreams, goals, and fantasies. Write down all of your big goals and dreams in a column on the left-hand side of the page. Draw a line down the center of the page, and in the right-hand column opposite your goals, write out the worst possible thing that could happen if you immediately took action toward the achievement of that goal. In almost every case, you'll find the worst possible consequence will not be as serious as you might imagine. One of the symptoms of subconscious fears is worry. Worry is a sustained form of fear caused by indecision and self-doubt. Worry, unfortunately, is a form of negative imagination. It is thinking about, emotionalizing, and imagining exactly the things that you don't want to happen. But the law of attraction is neutral. Your mind, and especially your superconscious mind, is extraordinarily powerful, but it draws into your life exactly the things that you most emotionalize and think about most of the time. You find that people who worry about money all the time always have money problems. People who think in negative terms about the people around them, people who are critical, demanding, and impatient, always seem to have problems in their relationships. People who are constantly looking for fast, easy ways to get their jobs done without putting their whole hearts into their responsibilities are always surprised that they are always having problems at work. When you worry, you attract into your life more and more of the things that you're worrying about. This is why you must be absolutely adamant about thinking, talking, and imagining only the things that you want and absolutely refuse to dwell upon the things that you don't want. This is one of the greatest of all tests of character and self-control, and it is the key component of success and happiness. Your willingness to take risks, to move out of your comfort zone, to break the bonds of learned helplessness, and to commit yourself completely to the accomplishment of worthwhile goals with no guarantees of success is one of the most important luck factors of all. How do you develop the quality of courage? Here are three steps which you can use over and over again. First, when you think of a situation that makes you afraid for any reason, try to identify the worst possible thing that could happen as the result of that situation. Once you've identified the worst possible thing that could happen, resolve to accept it should it occur. Then, you can stop worrying about it and put it out of your mind. Once you've put it out of your mind, you can begin thinking of all the different things that you can do to assure that it doesn't happen. Once you've identified the worst possible thing that can happen in any situation, your fears and your worries tend to evaporate. Your mind becomes calm and clear. You can then focus all of your energies and enthusiasm on success rather than spending half of your time thinking of failure. When I was in competitive karate some years ago, I learned an interesting technique from one of the top karate masters in the world. I found that if you move forward in a karate match, even half an inch at a time, your opponent would move backward to keep the relative distance the same between you. But because I was moving forward, 100% of my energy and attention was forward. And because my opponent was moving backward, as much as half of my opponent's energy was on where he was going and the edge of the mat. I was able to do very well in several national championship matches because I always moved forward even against a better opponent. Focusing 100% of your energies forward gives you that critical edge that can make all the difference between success and failure. One of the best ways to build up your courage and simultaneously diminish your fears and doubts is for you to identify all the rewards and benefits that you will enjoy as a result of achieving your goals. Write them all down. Friedrich Nietzsche, the German philosopher, once wrote that a person can bear any what if he has a big enough why. The more reasons you have for wanting to achieve your goals, the more rewards you can imagine that you will enjoy if you overcome the obstacles in your path, face your fears, and move forward regardless, the more power and energy you will have. Remember, you can only think about one thing at a time. If you're thinking about the rewards of success, you cannot simultaneously think about the penalties of failure. The more you think about what you want, the stronger and more powerful you become. And the more powerful you become, the more courage you develop, until you reach the point where you're not afraid of anything. You will start to become unstoppable in your movement toward your goals. If the first part of courage is the willingness to begin, to act in faith, and to move forward toward your goals with no guarantee of success, the second part of courage is your willingness to endure, to persist, to stay in there longer than anyone else. Sometimes the only advantage you have is that you have made a firm decision that you will never, never give up. The person who is the most resolute and determined in any competitive situation is usually the person who will win. The primary reason that people fail is not because of lack of ability or opportunities, but because of the lack of inner strength and the ability to persist in the face of obstacles and difficulties. As soon as you set a big goal for yourself, whatever it is, it's going to be like your ship of life has hit a storm. You will go into a squall and you will be tossed and turned by a whole series of unexpected reverses and difficulties. When you set new, big, challenging, exciting goals, your superconscious mind goes to work to trigger changes in the world around you, all of which have only one thing in common. They are meant to bring you the experiences and the opportunities you need to ultimately achieve at the new high standard that you set for yourself. Here are two powerful questions that you can use to turn failure into success and to increase your ability to persist in the face of adversity. I call these the golden questions. I learned them from a self-made millionaire, and I've taught them to many people who have used them to become self-made millionaires as well. The first question that you ask, no matter what happens, is, what did I do right? Carefully analyze every single thing that you did right in that situation. Even if the situation turned out to be a disaster, there were certain things that you did that were worthwhile and productive and worth repeating. Then ask yourself the second question. What would I do differently if I had this situation to do over again? This forces you to think about the valuable lessons that this situation contains. It forces you to think toward the future and what you can do rather than toward the past and what has happened. Both of these questions require positive answers that enable you to extract the maximum value out of every situation that occurs. Both of these questions enable you to keep your mind positive, focused, and forward-oriented. Both of these questions enable you to learn and grow at a rapid rate. I can promise you this. If you ask these two questions, what did I do right and what would I do differently, after every situation, after every sales call or meeting, you will learn and grow more in the next month than another person who fails to answer these questions might learn and grow in 2 or 3 years, if at all. If you work in a situation with other people, you should conduct an exercise with these questions on a regular basis. You will be astonished at the insights that you will get that will help you to move ahead faster than other people and will cause you to experience luck beyond your imagination. One of my favorite quotes is from Phil Knight of Nike Shoes. He said that you only have to succeed the last time. That's a great observation. You can fail over and over again, but all it takes is one big success, which is virtually inevitable if you continue to persist, and it wipes out all previous failures. No one ever accomplishes greatly without having passed the persistence test. It's like an exam that you must take over and over again. You can only advance in your life and in your career as you develop ever higher levels of persistence. And it is the greatest luck factor of all. Here's the amazing thing. Most people achieve their greatest successes one step beyond where anyone else would have quit. But this person, because he had resolved to never give up until he's achieved his goal, kept on keeping on and finally broke through. Sometimes your greatest failure can be the springboard to your greatest success. Sometimes the complete collapse of an idea or an enterprise is the final piece of the jigsaw puzzle that enables you to start the business or make the decision that achieves financial independence for you. By the way, there is a difference between persistence and stubbornness. Persistence is when you persevere toward a clear goal, even though you remain flexible regarding the means of attaining that goal. You always keep your eye on the ball. You always know where you're going, but you are willing to chop and change and try a variety of different ways to get there, and you never give up. Stubbornness, on the other hand, is when you fly in the face of the facts. You are trying to make something work that is obviously unworkable. The evidence against you is overwhelming. You are simply not being realistic or honest with yourself and the situation. You must think about the difference between persistence and stubbornness on a regular basis and make sure that it is persistence that you are engaging in and not stubbornness. The law of belief says that whatever you believe with emotion or conviction becomes your reality. Your beliefs manifest themselves in the world around you. You don't believe what you see what you have already decided to believe. You attract into your life exactly what is consistent with your innermost beliefs and convictions. Therefore, changing your beliefs about yourself and your potential is the number one task on the way to becoming a truly lucky person. Here's the key. The more you persist, the more you believe in yourself. And the more you believe in yourself, the more you persist. Your persistence is actually your measure of how much you believe in yourself and your ability to achieve. And you can increase your conviction that you will ultimately be successful by simply acting as if your success were ultimately guaranteed as long as you keep going. The way that you become unstoppable is by refusing to stop. When you develop a consistent action orientation and you apply the momentum strategy to your activities, you become like a force of nature, like a flash flood or a glacier moving inexorably in a particular direction. You become stronger and more optimistic. You become more resolute, and eventually you become unstoppable. When you develop the twin qualities of courage and persistence, you will begin to experience luck in ways that you never thought possible before. The more you practice courage and persistence, the better and stronger you become. If the first key to success is get-to-itiveness, then the other part, the second part of success, is stick-to-itiveness. Once you launch towards your goal, you simply resolve that you will keep putting one foot in front of the other until you finally get there. Throughout this program, I've explained and illustrated that luck is predictable. Success and happiness are not accidents. Everything that happens to you in your life happens to you for a good reason. People are where they are and what they are because of themselves, and especially because of the things they think about most of the time. The great secret of success is that there are no secrets of success. From the beginning of recorded history, the reasons for success have been discovered and rediscovered over and over again. They are, first of all, be absolutely clear about the things you want and the person you want to become. Second, think and talk continually about only those things. Refuse to think, talk, or worry about things that you don't want to have in your life. Third, learn everything that you possibly can to be absolutely excellent at what you do. Develop your skills and resolve to be among the top 10% in your field. This will help you more than anything else. The fourth key to luck and success is for you to become a totally positive person, so that people like you and want to be around you and help you. Fifth, develop a strategy for expanding your network of contacts and relationships in every part of your life. The more people who know you and like you, the more doors they will open for you. Sixth, make a habit of saving your money. Start with 1% and then eventually build up to 10%, 20%, and even 30%. A person with money in the bank attracts more opportunities and good luck than a person who is broke most of the time. The seventh key to luck and success in life is to unlock your inborn creativity. You are a potential genius. There is no problem that you cannot solve and no goal that you cannot achieve by applying the incredible power of your mind. The eighth key to luck and success is for you to continually focus on results, on the most valuable use of your time every minute of every day. The ninth key to luck and success is action orientation, the essential quality of all successful people. Get going, get busy, move fast, develop a sense of urgency, and stay in perpetual motion in the direction of your goals and aspirations. The tenth key to luck is the development of your character. The finer a person you become on the inside, by practicing the qualities of character that you most admire and respect, the more wonderful life you will have on the outside. And finally, have the courage to begin and the persistence to endure. When you combine all of these factors together, you become a totally positive, future-focused, highly energetic, likable, talented, skilled, intelligent, and optimistic human being. You become completely unstoppable, and you begin to have lucky experiences in every area of your life that will enable you to achieve every goal that you can ever set for yourself. And later on, when people say that you were lucky, you can smile humbly and talk about how fortunate you've been and how grateful you feel for it. But in your heart, you will know it wasn't luck at all. You did it all by yourself. This is Brian Tracy, and thanks for listening.
If you enjoyed this program from Master Motivator and Success Coach Brian Tracy, you are probably the type of high achiever that would benefit from Brian Tracy's personal success coaching program. This one-on-one coaching program is unlike any self-development tool ever offered. Imagine spending 12 weeks with your own coach who has been personally trained by Brian Tracy. Your coach will aid you on building your life strategies, guiding you as you take action steps toward making your greatest desires a reality. If you are like many, you often set goals, but sometimes lack the motivation to carry them through. With the ongoing nurturing and guidance of your personal coach and this outstanding program, you will be accountable for the changes you want to make in your life, and you'll soon see those changes becoming a reality. Created exclusively for Nightingale Connet by Brian Tracy, this program has had massive life-changing results on those that have committed themselves to it. It consists of a minimum of 12 weeks of 30-minute one-on-one telecoaching sessions with a trained personal coach. Accompanying the program are 12 cassette tapes, one for each week of study, along with a guidebook. This extraordinary program focuses on every aspect of your life and helps to integrate and balance your life success skills along with your business growth. Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Program offers you guidance in the areas of strategic planning, intelligence, health and fitness, power, career success, time management, financial planning, life success, relationships, goal setting, leadership, and building character. Your life will magically transform as you turn your conceptualized thoughts into active steps toward achieving your goals. Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Program is one of the most comprehensive, powerful self-development programs to date and is designed to fit your goals, dreams, and desires, both personally and professionally. Act now, today, and call in to receive further information and your free personal success profile with one of our trained personal development representatives. Designed with Brian Tracy, this profile will identify your strengths and pinpoint your growth opportunities. We offer this analysis to you at no cost and no obligation, so don't delay. To register for this outstanding coaching program or to receive your free personal success profile, call Nightingale Connet now at this number, 1-877-297-9799. That's 1-877-297-9799 and ask for Brian Tracy's Personal Success Coaching Profile. It's one phone call that could change your life.